Good morning and welcome to this, our first press conference of this year's New York Film Festival. I'm Richard Pena, Program Director of the Film Society. And on behalf of the Film Society, I'd like to welcome you. I'd also like to welcome our guests seated at the opposite end here. We have the actor of the film, Hanni Furstenberg. And here in the middle, we have the director and writer of the film, Julia Lochteff. Okay, let me begin, if I may, with a couple of questions. Julia, can you talk about the location? Why did you choose this particular part of the world, and had you considered others for this screenplay?
Well, I think the story kind of could take place in many places. Couples all over the world travel, hire guides. This could take place in lots of places. For me, Georgia was the place that I first got the idea. It was a place my parents had traveled to when they were young. My mom had hiked across the Caucasus, so I kind of grew up with this myth of Georgia. In the Soviet Union, Georgia was like the jewel of the vacation paradise of the Soviet Union. And also, the mountains there were so incredible. I mean, it's this very special landscape, you know, that looks almost like science fiction. That was another factor, I think. It was all these different things kind of converging. The other thing was that I think it's very known for its hospitality. We were talking about this earlier, you know. And the tourism industry in Georgia is kind of nascent still. So there is still the opportunity kind of to interact with people. People will buy you a beer. They might invite you to their house. And that's something very different. For me, it was important that these are travelers who seek out a place like this rather than going somewhere where, like, the role of the tourist is very established, like Thailand or something like this.
Hanni, could you talk about your impressions when you first got the script, when you first read the part? What did you think about this woman you were going to play and of the whole idea?
Well, the first script I got was about 45 pages of descriptions of what was going to be happening in the film. There was hardly any text, maybe just a few lines here and there. And I was told that the text would be put in later on, that I would be getting a new script closer to shooting, which I did. So it was very interesting for me. I'd never written a script like that either, but I'd never read a script like that. It was very exciting for me. I mean, just to think of being, you know, out in the wilderness with just, you know, mostly animals around us in the wild, hiking, which was not a very big thing for me ever, and, you know, getting into shape for the film and working with somebody like Gael Garcia Bernal and all of the factors, and Julia, you know, meeting Julia, it was just a very exciting thing to, you know, look forward to.
There's an incredible looseness to the film that makes one believe, probably erroneously, that there was a fair amount of improvisation that went on. Can you talk about that, both of you?
I mean, it's hard for me to think of it as improvisation because there were, I mean, Julia's, I really feel like we came together to try to bring Julia's vision to life. And Julia's vision was very specific. She really knew what she wanted to see. There were very, you know, there were little parts that we could be, you know, playful and stuff like that, more physically and things like that. But I think, I mean, the stories, the text, that's Julia's. And yeah, so it was kind of a mix of both. It was a very exciting mix of both, yeah.
Julia, for the casting, did you want this contrast? I mean, in the sense that Gael's, of course, Mexican, and, well, Hanni is, I guess, American-Israeli. And did you decide to have this kind of ethnic contrast, or how did that come about?
Well, I was interested in the idea of, like, masculinity, what it means to be a man now in contemporary culture. Obviously, that's very culturally constructed, but I also did not want it to be a film about Americanness in the most direct sense. And for me, like, you know, I'm originally from Russia. Everyone I know has an accent, pretty much, or they're from somewhere, and they don't have an accent. So to me, that's kind of like most people I know are like this. They're kind of from somewhere else and hybridized, so that was important.
Okay, let me get some questions from all of you. Yes?
What kind of traveling have you done, Hanni, besides this experience?
Well, I'm very...
Let me just repeat the question. Okay. But the question is to Hanni, what kind of traveling has she done, aside from what we see here in the film?
I moved to Israel when I was 16, and I'm a very bad Israeli, and the fact that I haven't, like, had my year-long India, you know, my husband traveled Southeast Asia for 2 years. So yeah, I was not like that. I've been to many places in the world. The longest trip I ever took, I guess, was a month in Thailand. You know, we trekked up in Chiang Mai in the north of Thailand, and then went down to the islands. Two days ago, I went hiking in Ithaca, which is beautiful. But
and
I'm not
shocking.
Yeah, and shocking.
Bonnie
I wanted to call Julia.
A hiking girl.
Yeah, I wanted to call Julia and be like, "You will never guess what I'm doing for fun."
Yeah, somewhere like after a few weeks of the shoot, like everyone was like, "Yeah, I need to camp more. I need to hike more." Honey was like, "People do this for fun."
Yes. How were the tracking shots done? Did you use Steadicam during the shoot?
We used an Easy Rig for the first half of the film, and then after the incident, actually, we changed it to a glide cam. So there's a slight change in the motion. I mean, it's almost imperceptible. But yeah, they were all very physical tracking shots, you know, where the camera operators had to walk, you know, up and down hills over a packed avalanche. And I'm very, very specific about composition. Some of those shots went on over like 4 minutes. And so it was definitely like a physical challenge for the camera operators on the film.
Yeah.
Yes. If I could summarize, I think the question is really about, in a sense, visual storytelling, that in a sense you really tell this story through visuals, through the camera angles, through the setups, through the compositions. Can you talk about that process?
Well, for me, it's a film about three characters, a landscape, and a camera, and probably sound as well. So it was always a matter of figuring out kind of when we would go in and start to film a scene, that was the first question, is how do the people move in this space and how does the camera move with them? You know, how do we... And we worked that out on the spot with every scene. How do we dance? It really was like a kind of complicated choreography that we would work out on the spot every morning or afternoon as we were filming. I mean, there were certain rules that we had with the camera. For instance, the question of the sky was very important. I didn't want to make a kind of pictorial landscape film in the way they're usually filmed, in the sense of going widescreen, you know, making it this giant landscape. I mean, for me, the question was, how do you tell this extremely, extremely intimate, delicate story in the middle of this vast landscape, and how do you use the camera and sound to do that? And one of the things that I decided was that we shouldn't see the sky the way we usually do in landscape films. There shouldn't be like this whole like escape at the top. So the sky can only be in little like slivers, like corners of the sky. It can't go all the way across the frame. And so that was kind of one of the rules of the dance until the last shot.
Can you talk about actually your work with the Georgian actors in the film?
Well, the lead character, Dato, is played by Bidzina Gujavitsa, who is definitely not an actor and had no desire to be an actor whatsoever. He is Georgia's top mountaineer. He has climbed Everest twice. He's climbed like 8,000 meter peaks. He was supposed to go to the Himalayas on an expedition, and we had to talk him into kind of rescheduling that to be in the film. I had met with a lot of actors. I met with guides. And one of the things that interested me was, you know, when you're a guide, you're a performer. Basically, you have a new audience every week. You're telling them probably the same jokes. You know, I don't know how many people he's tried this poisoning trick on, you know. But so I was interested in, you know, that experience that he brought to it. And usually he doesn't guide trekking. He guides, like, serious technical expeditions. And for me, it's really exciting, I mean, to work with people. And also the other people in the film were also people from the village. And that is thrilling for me, just kind of because somebody, they don't have a preconceived idea of like, what does it mean to act? They're like, okay, we're just doing it.
Yes, sir.
I missed a bunch of the credits. I noticed the Lamento excerpt. Your style seems very literary. Were you a novelist or short story writer before this? Is that burdensome, that kind of specificity, inform what you're doing and make it very easy to get your vision on the screen? Because it seems like a very, what was the source material and what are the messages?
This viewer said he missed the opening credits and was wondering about the source material, if it was adapted from anything, and wanted to know about Julia's experience either as a novelist or in the literary world.
I have no experience in the literary world whatsoever. And actually, writing is something I really detest. But there's a Lermontov excerpt in it from A Hero of Our Time, which is set partially in that part of the world. And the funny thing was that was kind of part of the reason that Gael agreed to the film, is he'd read it when he was 12 in school. And it was like one of the kind of ways that people learn about this region is through A Hero of Our Time. And he'd read it, and that made him want to travel there. So I thought this is a book they might be reading while traveling there, kind of going back to the school book and saying, okay, we're traveling through these same places. The source material is a short story by Tom Bissell, called Expensive Trips Nowhere, and I had read it because it comes from a collection called God Lives in St. Petersburg, and I'm originally from St. Petersburg, so I thought this sounded, I like picked it up literally for that reason. I thought, oh, what is this interesting book? And it's a story, it changed dramatically kind of from the story to the film. The central incident is the same, but the kind of people the story happens to, how they respond to it, is very different in the short story, but the incident is the same.
Did you share the story with your cast?
Oh, I had read it.
The question is, did the rest of the cast also read the story?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know how...
I don't know if you didn't give it to me, but as soon as I saw that it was based on the short story,
I read it. Yeah, it's how do you take this core incident and see it happening to very different people.
Yeah, it's very, very different, I think.
Also, dovetailing that, how the selection of the location is a character in the story and how you chose that as a setting for the story to unfold.
Exactly. I mean, well, one of the things, like, you know, for instance, kind of going to the short story, it was set in Kazakhstan, and I think it was somewhere much more rocky. One of the things that attracted me to this location was that it's soft, it's lush, it's kind of... It's like velvet, or one way I've described it, it's a little like if a golf course had exploded on some mountains. Like, I've never seen mountains like that. You know, I grew up like half in Russia, and then my family moved to Colorado, so I'm kind of a mountain girl. But you know, like when you go to the Rocky Mountains, they're rocky. They have trees. These are like just green velvet, and they're so strange, and that was really important to me.
Yes. For Julia, how can she compare Russian school of filmmaking with American school of filmmaking, those are?
I only finished second grade in Russia, so in terms of like actual education, I can't. But for me, Russian films are something that has been an influence, you know, and there are things that I looked at, like there's this film, The Letter Never Sent, that we looked at a lot, you know, as a kind of film, the most intense film about a landscape that I can think of. So there is a kind of history of Soviet films in general where landscape becomes a character and is a very kind of expressive character. So that was very important to me. But there's other things. It's funny, you know, when you think of the film, people tend to make references to other films that are about walking and landscape. Fundamentally, to me, the film is not really about walking and it's not about landscape. It's what happens between two people who are in love, about to be married, and, you know, with the presence of this guide. So there's things that I thought about that have absolutely nothing to do with landscape or walking. Like, I thought about Rossellini's Voyage in Italy, you know, as a reference point for me.
Yes, well, in the back there. Exactly at what point in the film does the incident happen? Is it really in the middle of the film?
It's more or less in the middle. Yeah. By the way, you know, this can be more of a conversation. I always think it's strange in these things, like it's very question, answer, but it can be more of a dialogue if you want to offer an opinion, that's fine.
Yes?
What militated for choosing those characters, the people, I mean, this actress and that actor? Was it something specific to her? I mean, the glorious hair informed every frame of the movie. I really thought it was a character in itself. But what militated this actress and that actor?
question is really about behind the choice for Hani and Gael for these roles.
I don't know if I can name it really as something so precise. It was much more than her hair. I saw Hani in a couple of films, and I thought she was just tremendous. I mean, had this openness, had this interesting combination, you know, of playfulness and also could go to places of sorrow as well. And it was the same for me with Gael, you know, and the combination of them. I mean, we had a very funny, Hani reminded me the other day, the audition process was very funny, if you can call it an audition, because for me it was important
how they
fit
together. That was the best audition process I had ever been through.
Yeah. Gael was living in Madrid, and then we flew Hani to meet him, because it was very important how they fit together. And so I thought, okay, how am I going to see how they work together? And so I sent them on a treasure hunt, which I think I had played at like a friend's birthday party a few weeks before, which was like sending them in Madrid, like go find a green drink, something pink and fluffy, something cold. And it was like all these cards of things they had to find and photograph. And, you know,
we were just walking around, like taking photographs of each other as if we were just tourists, you know, walking around Madrid. And I think Julia was just like this paparazzi in the background, going, you know, walking a few feet behind us and taking pictures of us together and kind of just seeing how we react to each other and how we relate.
Yeah, and from that it was very clear that the way they fit together and played off each other was so lovely that that was it.
Yes, sir.
I'm assuming you made a deliberate decision to not have subtitles in the beginning and instead of Mark. Can you speak more about that?
Could you talk about your decision not to have subtitles, neither the beginning or, in fact, during the incident?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted for the audience to be kind of in the same position as the couple is, you know, that they don't understand what's going on. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had that. It's that experience of watching somebody argue in a language you don't understand. You don't fully understand what's happening. And it was important for me that the audience is in the same position. And then later, I remember just recently, you know, that there is during the rain scene this moment where Nika asks, what did they want? And Dato kind of waves it away. And fundamentally, if you think about it, what difference would it make? You know, if you knew what they were saying, does it change what happened? Not really.
Yes, sir, sorry.
Yeah, there was mentioned earlier 45 big scripts, and you mentioned earlier, Julia, that you detested writing. I'm wondering why you didn't reach out to any of the writers, say, Tom Bissell, and did you make any efforts to work with him? What was the extent of that?
Question is whether or not, since you say you don't like writing, whether you ever thought about working with a writer, perhaps the author of the short story or someone else?
No, I mean, for me, it was a matter of taking what I was interested in from the short story and writing from there. I said a little bit in jest that I don't like writing in the sense that I don't aspire to be a novelist. But for me, the script, actually, I think it was about 30 pages. But, you know, the lines were all in there. The funny thing is that the lines were all in the script, more or less. They just weren't indented. This is the thing that people kind of, I find it very strange. People always say, you don't have a script. It was the same with Day Night. And I'm like, it's only because the lines are in the middle of the paragraph and they're not indented like they are in normal scripts. And when so much of the, you know, film takes place in silence, some of those things are very precisely described in what I write. Like I will describe like the movement of a hand and it's that precisely outlined, you know. I didn't want more dialogue than that.
If you could talk a little bit about the incident and how you dealt with it as an actor and also as time's gone on, how you think about it, the great moment. How you as an actor and as a person think about that moment, you know, during the incident with you and Gael.
I mean, it's something that we've been talking about a lot and talking to other people about a lot. It's very interesting to see how people react to that. I tend to think, you know, as a strong woman in 2011, I tend to think that it shouldn't, you know, it wouldn't be such a big deal if something like that would happen because we should be equal and, you know, he did this thing. And then when I start thinking about it and I see, you know, past patterns of me and my husband or something that he does and he doesn't manage to do it right and it's supposed to be a manly thing and then it, you know, it's like, whoa, the feeling of a woman still wanting to be protected by her man. I think shooting that scene was one of the hardest scenes that we shot. I think it took 3 days to shoot. It was, I mean, it was, those are the kind of scenes that are the most fun to shoot, I think, the most interesting, when something is happening and you get to react.
Were there a lot of different ways that you tried the scene, or?
I mean, it was more, I think, about shooting it, how we were gonna, you know, how Julia was gonna get what she wanted, but it was, you know, it was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that is the kind of central question, you know. Also, as a strong woman, that's something that I also think about, you know. Yeah, we've been raised to believe it doesn't matter. It should be the same, you know, if I do this to a man. Fundamentally, deep down, I know it is not the same. It is not the same. And that's kind of what's interesting to me. That's what interested me in the story. That's what interested me in the film, is this thing that contradicts everything that I kind of thought I believed, you know, everything that I think I should be as a woman now. And people respond to it very differently. I think it's interesting. There have been people who say, you know, nothing happens, what's the big deal? I'm like, why don't you bring your girlfriend and see if she agrees, you know? And, you know, and people do respond to that moment very differently.
Yes, sir. Questions about the theatrical release and distribution of the film.
We will see.
It does not have a distributor yet. We're hoping very much it gets.
Have distribution.
It will. That I'm sure. That I'm sure. But just in case there are any buyers out there. No, no, sir. Yes, sir. Right. Have you heard reactions of people thinking that what Gael did was perfectly natural, a kind of gesture of self-preservation that then he, for a moment, thought about and then kind of corrected?
Well, I think it's all of the above in a way, you know, and it's very difficult. It's such a quick thing that happens that it's almost beyond analysis. It's beyond, you know, it's not premeditated. It's not, this is a man who does something that he never thought he would do. Like, if you asked him, is this how you think you should behave in this situation? Is this what you will do to your fiance? Is this how you want to act? He would say, hell no, of course not, never in a million years. And yet in this second, he does it. And that's all that matters. Like, once it matters, it's, you know, once it's done, it's done. And then how do you deal with it after? And I think one, you see what I see, you know, it's like you can look at the screen and there is, you know, I don't have an answer to that. And I'm not sure anyone does. You know, I think one of the things that interests me, not just only about the incident, but also after the incident, the rest of the film takes place basically, you know, it takes place the same day until the last shot, you know, as the incident happened. And I think everything happens so quickly, and they're in this space where they're walking with this guide after, they're never alone after. Nobody really knows what they feel. Nobody really knows what to do. There's not a clear answer, you know. I think the characters themselves aren't very sure, you know, and it changes from moment to moment.
Okay, time for a couple more. Yes,
sir. They did play shock very well.
They played shock well.
Exactly.
You felt the shock. The shock was very convincing.
And I think time is such a crucial aspect of this, you know. When you're processing something, how you act the minute after, how you act an hour after, how you act 5 hours after, how you act the next day is different. And how people negotiate that space is what interested me. And it's not always so clear in the sense, like, one person might make a little gesture towards the other person, and then the other person backs away. And then the next time, you know, the other person makes a gesture, then, you know, the person that made the initial gesture will back away. And it becomes this kind of awkward dance.
Time for just a couple more. Yes, back there.
What I think is that we've been
question, really, this viewer said she's been on trips like that. She feels really captured that sense of vulnerability that people feel when they're on these trips, and perhaps especially a woman's vulnerability.
I think they're both really vulnerable. I think when you travel, you're not at home. You're extremely vulnerable. I mean, also, like, this is, by the time this happens, they're more than a day's walk from the village. I mean, obviously how they respond to it is quite different than if this happened, like, you know, in Brooklyn. Or even if it happened in a city where they could go back and negotiate this whole situation in a hotel. I mean, they're not at home. They're out in nature. And they're alone, but alone with somebody else who's witnessed everything and is kind of a part of it.
Yes. Question is about the guide's story that this viewer says she was very moved by his revelation of his own background and his story and wonders how Julia came up with that story.
I mean, for me, that was really important, is suddenly this other story. I mean, the guide has been carrying his own weight, his own story this whole time. And he's been a kind of cipher figure. We don't really know kind of who he is. And suddenly this other story kind of intrudes, a parallel story, you know, that comes into it. And I mean, this was something people have asked me, you know, is that Bidzina's own story? I'm like, no, he's happily married with four kids. It's not, you know, he tells it as if it's his own story, but that is a story that I wrote based on things I knew a little bit, tiny bit, based on something that was happened to friends of my family's, but I reworked it. Like, I often work off things, kind of take pieces from things I hear or know and completely change them.
Okay, I'm afraid that's all we have time for. I want to thank Han and Julie very much for the film and for being here today.
Thank you.
And thank you as well.
And thank you to Richard and to the New York Film Festival. We're very happy to be here.